I'd like to invite you to open your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. We're going to spend some time this morning and the next few weeks looking at this rather amazing book. Self-help books. I'll bet you we've all bought at least one, haven't we? I got a whole stack of them. Mostly I like to buy these time management self-help books. I found something very interesting about every one that I own. None of them work. I've tried them. Well, maybe that's the problem. I should try those books. But anyway, I'm probably not a lot better with time management than ever, but I just know I should do better, so I buy all these self-help books. And so I got a lot of them on my shelf. They're collecting dust. I should put them to use and probably be a better time manager. But when I think about self-help books, we are about to look at the best, I think, that there is, the book of Proverbs. And we want to bring that front and center today because there's just an amazing assortment of topics in this book with 31 chapters, covering topics such as team living, sexual relationships, that ought to have your attention, business transactions, money management, goal setting, personal discipline, parenting, character development, political action, and the list could go on and on. So it is a very versatile and practical self-help book. The credentials of the writer of this book are pretty impressive as well. The human writer of the book of Proverbs was notably successful as a businessman and as a political leader. His decision-making abilities were and still are unparalleled. The writer was widely sought out because of his insight and wisdom. Again, the greatest of all how-to books is this book of Proverbs, and the renowned human author was King Solomon, considered to be the wisest man. No, he is the wisest man who ever lived. And so the wisdom that we find on the pages of the Proverbs that make this such an extraordinary book, that wisdom is so valuable to us because the source of the wisdom is absolutely divine. It doesn't come really from Solomon, it comes from God himself. And so probably good to know a little bit of background before we take a look at Proverbs this morning. But back at the time when Solomon was a rookie ruler, or he was the new king on the block, or whatever you want to say, God offered to him what we might call basically a blank check. It says in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5, rather amazing statement. This is God speaking to Solomon. He says, "Ask what you wish me to give you. Ask me what you wish me to give you." Sounds a little bit like rubbing that little magic lantern, you know. No, it's not like that. But anyway, God appears to Solomon and basically offers him that blank check. Whatever it is you want, ask me, and I'll give that to you. Of course, we'd love to be in that same situation. Wow, God's going to give me anything at all. I ask, what in the world would I ask for? His response is very, very interesting. 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. He says, "Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant," here's what he's asking for, "so give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this great people of yours?" So I don't know how much time Solomon had to think about God's offer, but he reached a conclusion and he came back to God and said, "God, here's what I've decided. I've decided that I need to have some wisdom. I need to have discernment in my heart to be able to determine what's best for these people that you've entrusted me to serve." Interesting, if you know the rest of the story, that God was pleased enough that that was what Solomon asked for, that he added a couple of other things to what he gave him, namely fame and fortune. And so Solomon received this gift of wisdom that he sought, but because that was the priority that he had, God said, "I'm pleased enough, I'm going to make you very, very famous, and I'm also going to make you fabulously wealthy." And so, it is little surprise that in the book of Proverbs, we find a great deal here about wisdom, about success, and about fame. So those are all qualities that the world seeks after. And so we find those answers and so forth in this book of Proverbs that we take a look at. So therefore, again, Proverbs is absolutely the greatest how-to book that you can ever add to your library. And so I want us to just sample a little bit out of it today, kind of just to do a little flyover of the book and take a look at some of the practical and highly effective principles that you will find on these pages. Many of these things you've already read and you know about, but I'm praying and trusting that you'll see these things in a fresh light, if that be the case, and others, perhaps you're going to find some things that you have never found there at all. So let's take a look right away, Proverbs chapter 1, beginning in verse 1 down to verse 6. And so the writer says, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and understand and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge, and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. So again, Solomon identifies himself. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, who is the son of David, who is the king of Israel, as we've mentioned. And he talks about why these things are recorded, why these things are listed here for us to study. And as you read that list, verses 2 to 6, you realize that there is no book that is more all-encompassing than this one. It is literally designed for every person in every stage of life, from childhood to youth, on up to adult life, to ultimately understand what life is all about. So there's no one excluded, no matter how old or how young you are, no matter what your situation is in life. This book is written so that you'll understand the mysteries of life, and we all need insight into life's mysteries. And so right away with that, Solomon introduces us to the key theme and the key premise in verse 7. Again, I'm sure a verse familiar to many people. He says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord, he says, is the beginning of knowledge. And so this is the key assumption, which is absolutely true. And it's about as basic as it gets, but I really wonder if we grasp that. And that is that God, our Creator Father, has all the answers. That's essentially what he says right away in this verse, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It all originates with God, and that is the beginning of knowledge. And so all knowledge, everything you need to know, is to be found in God. In order to appreciate that more, think again about Solomon. The writer of this book, he is the new king over a large number of people, a large and a powerful nation, and he really is at a loss as to what to do as a leader. And so he desperately needs some ability to lead these people. God comes to him with the offer, ask anything you want, and so he's very much aware, here's what I need. God, I need information that only you can provide to me. And so recognizing his situation, it brings each one of us to realize we cannot figure it out ourselves. No matter how smart and how clever we are, we cannot figure it out ourselves. And if we've tried to figure it out ourselves, we know it doesn't work out too well. Kind of like Dr. Phil's question, how's that working for you? If we've tried to figure it out on our own, that isn't working too well. And so ultimately, we come back in humility to say, God, I make a mess of it when I try to do it myself. I do not have the answers. Like Solomon, I need to come and just beg for your wisdom and your understanding. And so that's where it all begins, according to this. The fear of the Lord, he says, is the beginning of knowledge. A lot of misunderstanding about this fear of the Lord thing. A lot of people think that fear of the Lord is a cower in the corner kind of fear that God's going to do something to you. That God is perfect, that God is all powerful, and step out of line just a little bit, you know, and God's going to zap you, and that's going to be the end of it. And a lot of people think that's what the fear of the Lord is, that I should be trembling somewhere in a corner because God's going to find me out eventually. He's going to strike me down dead. No, that's not what fear of the Lord is. As many of you know, it simply means awe and respect of God. It's a very positive thing. And so it's realizing God is God and we're not, huh? It's coming before God and realizing that He alone is deserving of all of our awe and our respect because He contains it all. Everything comes from Him. And so the fear of the Lord, the awe and the respect of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, as He says here. Now, a key thing to consider is it's the beginning of knowledge. Not the sum total, not the end of it, the beginning of it. That's where you start. is with respect and awe for God, it then becomes an ongoing process. If you want to flip over to chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, again, two verses I'm sure that are very familiar. Here's the ongoing process of what's introduced here in chapter 1. Solomon says, trust in the Lord, verse 5, with all your heart. That's an important thing to pick up on. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He will make your path straight. The awe and respect of the Lord lived out continuously. This is how it works. We are ongoing trusting in the Lord with all of our heart, not daring to lean upon our own understanding, but recognizing we are absolutely, totally dependent upon God for His knowledge and His understanding. Flip over to chapter 9 for a minute. We're going to do a lot of verse jumping here in Proverbs, so keep your fingers nimble and ready. Chapter 9, verse 10 is a verse that sounds very similar to chapter 1, verse 7. Solomon says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." Chapter 1, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now we come to chapter 9, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The order is very, very important. We begin with knowledge. We move on to wisdom. Knowledge is simply raw data, raw information. A lot of people got plenty of information. They got plenty of knowledge and have no idea what to do with it. The fear of the Lord brings about the wisdom that says, I can take this information that I've accumulated in my life and I can bring it to bear on this situation, that situation, that situation, and so forth. Wisdom is applied knowledge, as has been stated. And so the fear of the Lord, the awe and respect of the Lord is the beginning of that as well. Not just gathering the information, but God directing us in what to do with that information as we bring it to bear on life situations. All right, again, I told you we're going to do just kind of a little flyover of the book here, looking at a few key verses. We're going to go back in the next few weeks and look a little more in detail. But chapter 1, verse 8 is the first of about 10 lessons from a father to his son. So here's some good parenting stuff. The focus primarily of what he talks about in these verses, if you skim through them, is the father's talking to his son about his choice of friends. And how important it is to choose good friends. Friends are certainly a very powerful influence. So, father writing to his son who's still living at home under his roof, basically saying to him, be careful of your choice of friends because they powerfully impact your life. If you were to jump over to chapter 3, things change with the father and his son. The young man is now grown up such that he's ready to leave home. And so the father writes to his son and talks about the pressures and the temptations that he's going to face as he goes out for life on his own away from the protection and security of his father's home. And as I think about that chapter and those teachings, this is real good stuff for youth. Real good stuff for teenagers and young adults. Because it's all about the situations that you face in life. So this is real good stuff for young people, chapter 3, to look into that. And so he talks about those pressures, those temptations that this young man will face as he goes out into the world. Of course, he talks about the issue of sex. He talks rather delicately and frankly about it and the impact of sex outside of marriage. So again, good stuff for teens and for young adults. And again, in all of his instruction to this son who's now ready to move out on his own, chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, again, come front and center. Make sure you trust in the Lord with all of your heart and do not lean on your own understanding, etc. So it's really important, especially for young people. Chapter 10, I know we're jumping way ahead here. Chapter 10 begins the first collection of the wisdom of Solomon. And if you look into that chapter, you notice the tone of it all begins to change because these are these real short little sayings, this collection of short little tidbits from Solomon, short, very practical statements that cover every possible situation in life. And as you get into those things, they pretty much are self-explanatory. It'll be a little bit tough to preach and teach on these things because you read them and say, okay, I understand that. In fact, someone has said trying to explain the Proverbs you find in chapter 10 on, trying to explain those is a little bit like trying to explain the punchline to a joke. If you got to explain it, doesn't work terribly well, does it? And so such as it is with Solomon's Proverbs here in this chapter, you read it and say, all right, I don't need any explanation. I understand. And that shows the wisdom of Solomon that you can read it, get your mind around it, and say, yeah, I can see where this begins to fit and to work. The first collection of his Proverbs here start mostly with contrasts. If you look right away in verse 1, chapter 10, The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a father glad. Notice the contrast. But a foolish son is a grief to his mother. So, dad says, that's my boy. But the boy who veers off the other direction brings untold grief to his mother. There are additional statements on down into this chapter that he makes a statement and he describes it in kind of a down-to-earth sort of a way. And I think Jesus' parables are a lot like that, where Jesus will say, the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. It's like, okay, I can understand it. Well, such as it is with Solomon here, he makes statements and then he emphasizes them with something out of nature. So look at verse 26 in chapter 10. I love this. He says, like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy one to those who send him. Isn't that descriptive and interesting? You know, have you ever vinegar on your teeth? I hate to even say that. It bothers me to even think about it. Smoke in your eyes. We know what that's like. What could be more irritating? Getting smoke in your eyes, especially those of us that wear contact lenses, that's a real problem. He says, well, that's the way it is with someone who sends someone on an errand and they dawdle along the way. You know, I'm picturing we got a work project going here at church and there's something where a group of us are working on. I'll say, hey, we need something from down at Lowe's. Or Home Depot, to be in fairness to him here. Okay, so-and-so, run down and get that because we need it right now. And just imagine that. The person heads off in their car down to the Lowe's or Home Depot and says, you know, I'm kind of hungry. A hamburger sounds pretty good about now. Or I'm really thirsty. I'm thinking maybe to get a Coke or milkshake or what. Anyway, they take all the time in the world to get there. And meanwhile, everybody here is waiting for that particular item. And for them, it's like vinegar on the teeth or smoke in the eyes. And so Solomon just explains things in such a practical, down-to-earth way like that. Chapter 11, let's flip over a few verses. Verse 22. As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. Wow. A ring of gold in the nostril of a pig. What a contrast. Something of value in a pig's nose. That's about the least likely place for that. And so Solomon says that is a description of a beautiful woman that lacks discretion. A young woman that has outward beauty, that hasn't learned the secret of inner beauty. He said that's how displaced it is, just like that ring of gold in a pig's snout. Wow, that's pretty straight up. All right, let's look on down to verse 24. He says, there is one who scatters and yet increases all the more. And there is one who withholds what is justly due and yet it results only in want. Comparing and contrasting generosity with being flat out stingy. And isn't that the way it works? Solomon in his wisdom sees that's the way it is in life. The generous person gives away and yet he can't give it all away. It seems to come back. And yet the stingy person kind of hoards everything and never has quite enough. So, again, we see his wisdom, the illustration made from nature. Chapter 12. Again, we're not going to read all these verses now. We'll come back and visit them later. But verses 16 to 22 of chapter 12, we might say these are words about words. The priority of speech and the difficulties we get into with speech. Chapter 12, we could look at verses 18 and 19. He says, there is one who speaks rashly, like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. And so how very illustrative that is. The one who speaks rashly is like somebody stabbing with a sword. It brings injury and loss. But again, the one who speaks properly brings about healing. And so the comparison and contrast of words. Verse 22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. But those who deal faithfully are His delight. What does God desire? God desires faithful and honest words. Chapter 14, let's flip over a bit more. Chapter 14, verse 12. There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Very interesting, the underlying secrets of life. Things are not always the way they seem. There is a way that seems right. And so from our own understanding, you know, trust not in your own understanding. Depend totally upon the Lord. There's a way that seems right, but we can be so very badly mistaken, he says. The end is actually the way of death. And so we do not realize how badly we can be deceived if we depend upon our own knowledge and information. Chapter 15, verse 17. Better a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. So if I can paraphrase what he's saying, better to have a simple meal where love is present than to have a buffet where there is hatred. Chapter 16, verse 20. He who gives attention to the word will find good, and blessed is he who trusts in the Lord. I think that's what we're trying to do this morning, isn't it? And I think that's what many of us do every single day. We are blessed. Indeed, if we give attention to the Lord and we find out what is good, trusting the good word of the Lord, and we are blessed in trusting the God that we learn about through His word. Chapter 17, verse 15. He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the righteous, both of them alike are an abomination to the Lord. Wow, that fits any time, doesn't it? There's always that going on in every age. Those who try to justify the wicked, those who condemn the righteous, God is in every situation at every time totally displeased with such things. 17, verse 28, jumping on down a bit further, the last verse of that chapter. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered to be prudent. I imagine that's where that popular phrase came from. It is much better to remain silent and let everyone think that you are a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. And that's kind of what Solomon is basically saying there. Even a foolish person who knows enough to keep his mouth shut might actually look wise. Open his mouth, certainly he removes all doubt. Chapter 18, verse 8. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body. Gossip seems to be in view in that verse, telling us maybe why it is that we like gossip. Gossip, as he describes it here, is a little bit like a sweet snack, something we enjoy the taste of, but it goes down into the digestive tract, it goes down into the innermost parts, and I guess we might say it inevitably is going to cause some pretty serious heartburn later on, because gossip is going to destroy someone's character and reputation. Verse 22, chapter 18. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. I got to chuckle a little bit on that one because I'm thinking Solomon ought to know. Here's where I question his wisdom. How many wives did this guy have? Thousands of them and concubines. So I guess he would know. But nevertheless, he was inspired to write these words. He who finds a wife, he could have put in wives, finds a good thing. But indeed, those of us in marriages where indeed we're happy with the spouse that God has brought to us, we know that finding a wife indeed is a good thing. And we have the favor of God. That's my testimony. God led me to the greatest woman in the world. And I certainly know that I have his favor in the choice of wife that he gave to me. Verse 24, chapter 18, the last verse of that chapter. A man of too many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Easy enough to accumulate friends around us that will tell us what we want to hear. And there's a danger in that, because if we listen to the advice of those who are always telling us what we want to hear, they're going to steer us the wrong way. But there is a friend, he says, that sticks closer than a brother. That's the kind of friend you really want to have. Somebody who will stay with you no matter what the situation in life. They'll tell you the honest truth, whether it's convenient for you or not. That's the kind of friend to have. And again, I'm quite sure that Solomon knew that from experience. Chapter 19, verse 3. The foolishness of man ruins his way, and his heart rages against the Lord. There's an interesting commentary on how it is with many people. The foolishness of a man will ruin his way. A man makes a choice for a particular course of action, and he ruins his way. He makes a mess of his life by a decision that he makes, and his heart rages against the Lord. Isn't that the way it sometimes goes? Well, it's God's fault, and I'm really ticked off at God that things have turned out that way. Wait a minute, Solomon says, you made the choice. You made ruin of your life. And yet in your heart, you're raging against the Lord. Again, what wisdom he shows in sharing that. Chapter 20, verse 9. Who can say, I have cleansed my heart? I am pure from my sin. there's something that's truly timeless. Is there an individual who can say, I have completely cleansed my own heart, that I have taken care of the problem of sin in my life? Can anyone say that? Of course not. It is foolishness to think so. The solution for sin God provided through His Son Jesus. But what an important question to ask. If everybody would be ruthlessly honest with that question, they'd all become believers. But such an important searching question. Verse 27, also down in chapter 20. The spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord, searching all the innermost parts of his being. The spirit of man, the spirit that God has placed within us, it is a lamp of the Lord. To be in touch with God's Holy Spirit within, what a wonderful thing to bring illumination to the innermost parts of our being. God's desire is that we be in step with His Spirit, be illuminated, and understand life as we ought. Chapter 21, verse 9. This one I get a kick out of. It is better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Solomon knew. Out of the 1,000 or so wives he had to have at least one that was contentious. And so I picture him up on the corner of the roof, kind of away from all the noise downstairs, saying, you know, it's a lot better to have this little place of peace and quiet than to have this contentious wife that's driving me crazy. And so I think Solomon certainly knew that from personal experience. Chapter 21, verses 30 and 31. There is no wisdom and no understanding and no counsel against the Lord. The horse is prepared for the day of battle, but victory belongs to the Lord. You cannot win out against God. You cannot fight against God and win. It's said that someone once said to Napoleon, the great ruler, that man proposes, but God disposes. And apparently Napoleon, in his arrogance, said, no, Napoleon proposes and Napoleon disposes. Good to note that he said that before the Battle of Waterloo. God has proved right and wise. Chapter 22, verse 6. Very famous verse for parents. Train up a child in the way he should go, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Many a parent clings to that promise. Train up a child in the way he should go. He may depart at some point, but when he is old, he will not depart from that. And that's certainly a promise to hold on to. Chapter 23, verses 13 and 14. Quite controversial, I might add, in this day and age. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, whoa, he will not die. You shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. I don't know if you can even read that without social services coming around to have a talk with you. In this day and age, that kind of discipline, apparently it's pretty much frowned upon in our society. And yet, think about what Solomon says here and the wisdom of what he says. Chapter 25, flipping over a couple more pages. This is the second collection of Solomon's Proverbs. And in verse 1, these are also Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, transcribed. And so Solomon gets credit for these, but these somehow came down from King Hezekiah. So verse 17 of that chapter, let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, or he will become weary of you and hate you. Isn't that just down-to-earth and practical? Don't be over in your neighbor's house too much. They're going to get real tired of you and wish you weren't coming around and wish you ill will and maybe say and do things that aren't terribly pleasant. So just be careful about that. Chapter 26, verses 3 to 12, fools and how to handle them. We may get into that in a few more weeks. Also in chapter 26, verse 17 down to 23, meddlers and how to handle them. We've all run into them. Maybe we've been one. Who knows? And in chapter 26, verses 24 to 28, issues related to hatred. That's a sobering subject, but an important one. It's easy to be given over to that. And then chapter 27, verse 17, a verse I so much value, I'm sure many of you here do as well. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And how true that is. Find someone that will challenge you and stimulate you in discussion and study and so forth. You'll be the better for it. Both of you will be the better for it, because as iron will sharpen iron, so it is with one person discussing and talking with another, and how very valuable that is. Chapter 29, verse 1. A man who hardens his neck after much reproof will suddenly be broken beyond remedy. You know, that's pretty earthy and valuable information. A man who becomes a stiff-necked individual after being corrected by someone else inevitably is destined to be broken. So be open to correction, be open to instruction, Solomon says to us. And then finally, chapter 30. These are the words of Agur. I may not be pronouncing his name correctly, but Solomon has compiled these proverbs from this wise individual. And it's good stuff, but we don't know a thing about him. He's kind of an unknown in history, but the words are worthy of taking a look at. Finally, chapter 31, the words of one King Lemuel. Lemuel, however you pronounce it. And mostly, this is what his mother told him about how to be a good king. So if you want a good summary of chapter 31, this is what Mom told me about being a king. I wonder, Mom must have been pretty wise. I doubt she'd been a queen or a king. But nevertheless, she told him how to be a good king. And the very end of that chapter, a lot of women don't really like this section, but the model woman, the model wife, verses 10 to 31 of chapter 31 rounds it out with that sometimes gets read on Mother's Day, but I think mothers get resentful of it, so I, for one, don't use it very often on Mother's Day. But anyway, some information there about being a good wife, a good woman. So, 31 chapters we have in Proverbs. We've just kind of flown over them, looked at a few key verses. We're going to backtrack and look closer at certain sections that are very valuable for us to do so. But I'm thinking most months of the year have 31 days, don't they? You've got 31 Proverbs, so a pretty good assignment is read one every day and grow in your wisdom and understanding of the mysteries of life. There's a famous evangelist who said to me, Psalms tell us how to get along with God, and the Proverbs tell us how to get along with man. So recipe for a good life is read about 5 Psalms a day and 1 Proverb a day, and you're going to learn much more about how to get along with God and how to get along with your fellow man. And I think that's pretty good advice. So I commend this to you, that you might take even 1 Proverb a day, read that, and see if the wisdom does not apply to the situations you face in life. I think you'll find that they do.